Due to the graphic content of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Previously on First Degree Liberty.
Who would you say is the bottom that most adults
would
agree?
In our society is the individual, right? The top is whatever arbitrary collective group wants to insert their will over the individuals who are the smallest unit of society.
So what group of people is the biggest bottom in society?
I would say Puerto Rican women have the biggest bottom. Maybe black women, I don't know.
Oh, you're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you're gonna let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round. Hey! I was just a skinny lad. Never knew no good from bad. But I knew life before I left my nursery. Left alone with big fat fatty. She was such a naughty natty. Hey, big woman, you made a bad boy out of me. Hey, hey! I've been singing with
hey, you know it's going to be a great show when we start off with some Queen, Fat Bottom Girls, right here on First Degree Liberty. I'm Mike, and on today's show, Chase and I are joined by Antigone of Sex, Lies, and Anarchy podcast to talk a little bit about some comments I made on a previous show. It seems like I got in trouble for a few comments which could be considered sexist on episode 14, The Media Sucks. So Antigone's going to join us to talk about those comments, talk a little bit about what offends people, sexism, racism, and a whole bunch of other isms. So keep it locked in right here, because it's going to be a great show. Don't forget to go on to iTunes, subscribe to First Degree Liberty there, and check out Sex, Lies, and Anarchy while you're at it. It's one of my favorite podcasts. Now, stand by for episode 20, I'm Offended by Your Sexism. Broadcasting from New York City and Asheville, North Carolina, it's First Degree Liberty with Chase Rachels and Mike Martelli.
Okay, so for the first time, we here at First Degree Liberty got an email from a listener that was complaining. Normally, we get some emails saying, hey, great show, good job, guys. But for the first time, we got a complaint. And it was actually a pretty civilized complaint. I got an email from a woman who was saying that she enjoyed the show, but she didn't like that in episode 14, the episode where Brett Vinat joined us, that I made a comment basically saying that Puerto Rican women have the biggest butts in America. Now, to me, that just seemed like a really innocent kind of joke, and I don't know what the big deal about this is, but apparently she was offended by it. So she wrote me an email saying that she was offended by it and that she would be embarrassed to send the show to her female friends because of that one tiny comment. Now, for those of you who are listening, I'll try to find the clip here to put it in either before or after the show, but it's episode 14 and it's 40 minutes in, and the exchange is basically really simple. Brett is asking the question, what group of people is the biggest bottom in society? Now, he meant it in terms of like the biggest minority group in the country. And I, since he said the biggest bottom in society, I just jumped in and said, I would say the Puerto Rican women are the biggest bottoms. Now, I really just don't see that as a huge thing. So joining me not only is my co-host Chase, but today we have Antigone Darling of Sex, Lies, and Anarchy podcast to join us to talk about this topic and sexism in general, and why do some people take offense to little tiny joke comments like that. So Antigone, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So did you see anything wrong with that comment?
Maybe the listener who wrote that email doesn't have enough Puerto Rican friends, because I think they would have enjoyed your comment.
I have a theory, Mike. I think Maybe she was black and she was offended because she feels like black people have the biggest bottoms, not Puerto Ricans.
Well, she could have said that at least and be like, hey, well, you know, I could have issued a correction statement.
No, you know, as far as the discrimination topic goes, I think this is the best way to really combat discrimination in a negative way is just to make fun of it. If you make it into a joke, you kind of really make it less of an issue than what it is. When you're really sensitive about this kind of stuff, this is what makes it a bigger deal than what it really should be. This is what makes people really sensitive because they're all about, hey, should I be politically correct on this topic? And what should I say? African-American or homosexual or whatever. They don't know what words to use, and they're all stressed out about it, and all these kind of tensions rise. But if you just kind of make it a joke and just kind of, you know, make fun of everyone's stereotypes, then I think that's the best way to kind of get rid of this negative prejudice.
Chase, you're conflating two things. There's sensitivity, and I think it's good that humans are sensitive to each other, and then there's being overly worried about PC crap, which doesn't mean anything. It's good to be sensitive. But Mike was not making a judgment call about bottoms of Puerto Rican women. You know, he was talking about a stereotype, which stereotypes come from somewhere. Latin women are very curvaceous. It's actually American men who are obsessed with breasts. Men of the world, what they find attractive is the ratio from waist to hips. And that's a positive thing. That's what people find attractive. And I read this email, and she wasn't just talking about this comment. She refers to episode 3. Another comment was made that women are sexy in leather. So both comments, she used the word objectifying, that you're objectifying women. In today's society, a man cannot say, like, hey, I find that sexy, because then that's objectifying women. It's a positive thing. And
right.
And of course, then also the objectifying of women leads me to another concept, which, you know, I get accused all the time. I'll get accused of being a misogynist, and then I'll get accused of being a feminist, like, all the time.
So you're doing it right, then.
Well, if women are objects, then men are disposable. You know, women have inherent value because they produce the children of a society. Women are protected. Men protect them. Men are sent off to war as meat bags.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which would you rather be? Would you rather be an object of value, a prize, or would you rather be a meat bag? Not that those are your only two options, but if you look at, you know, society in general, that's how sexism has hurt both sexes.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and we're
be a woman than a soldier, that's for sure.
But the big thing here is that there's a actual science behind why men find curvaceous women attractive. There's a biological reason for that. It's not just that we want to see, you know, a big booty in the kitchen making our sandwich. It's that a biological reason to that.
Child-bearing hips.
Right, exactly. And you know, big breasts, too, of course, have always been a symbol of fertility throughout the ages. You know, if you've gone back to looking at ancient sculptures and ancient artwork, you'll find that a lot of times they over-exaggerate curvaceous women, you know, for that reason, because it's a symbol of fertility.
You know, I'll go ahead and posit a theory here, and,
sure.
And that is that if you don't know somebody, and all you know about them is their appearance because you just saw them in public or something, then they may as well be objects. Because until you get to know them, they're not really a person yet. The same thing with a woman in a magazine. What, like, in a, well, let's say, like, a Victoria's Secret magazine or something. She, the capacity she's operating in is as an advertising tool or an object to advertise a certain product. You're not looking at the magazine at her to get to know her. You're looking at her for the appearance of her and for how the, whatever clothes she's wearing is fitting on her or what sex or whatnot. So, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with quote-unquote objectifying women or men. It just depends on what your relationship is with them. I mean, if I'm going to have a relationship with the girl, then I have an incentive to get to know her better, or maybe there's other things about her that I figured out which intrigues me about her, or same thing with the guy. But I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with quote-unquote objectifying someone. I mean, if all you know about them is their appearance, they are objects until you get to know them.
That's a good point, and I want to bring up one other thing that is definitely going to offend a lot of people, I'm sure, is that when you're out in public, and, you know, I'm here in New York City, and there's millions of people in the streets, and I walk a lot in the streets, so you see a lot of people, and you see that there are a lot of women, and I'm going to go based solely on my observation here, so this is just sort of empirical on my own here, is that I see a lot of women going out dressing the part of wanting guys to look at their sexual features. There's, you know, they're wearing really, really short, those leggings where you can pretty much leave nothing to the imagination. And, you know, it's annoying for me because you look at them and then they kind of give that this attitude like, why are you objectifying me? You know, and I know that's going to piss off a lot of people by saying that, but I think it needs to be said.
Well, there's that whole thing where neo-feminists will hold signs like, you know, I'm not asking to be raped, blah, 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 and they make that big jump, which is completely ridiculous. If people dress up to go to the bar and are showing cleavage or whatever, yeah, they want you to look at them. I mean, basically, you are being punished by society for being a sexual person, and I think we all are sexual people, and there's this whole movement where asexual people want to be recognized as being normal, and I still have to do a bunch of research on that because I will call bullshit on that initially without having done any research.
Well, even if it is valid, they're not normal, because normal is just what's the most prevalent, and they're certainly not the most prevalent, right?
Sure. Let's change that to healthy.
Sure, that's fine.
So I have a hypothesis here about why people get offended by these things, and it's a hypothesis. It hasn't really been tested much, but I want to throw that out there to see what you guys think about it. And that is that I think that people who get offended easily by statements like the one I made about Puerto Rican women probably have some issues in their past that they haven't dealt with. You know, maybe they felt objectified by men in their past. And so they just sort of assume that all men are out there to objectify them. And they haven't really processed that thing. So it becomes this quick emotional reaction to it, that somebody says a comment and they just sort of get this little bit of anger, and they have to say, you sir offended me, which in itself is a statement of just sort of a statement of blame. It's saying you are at fault for something you said and some opinion you have. So to me, it's like you're projecting some past issues onto that person.
Sure. I mean, whoever got offended made the decision to get offended, and that's their own anxieties showing.
Right.
Now, I'll go ahead, and before we move on from this topic, I want to talk about the whole I didn't ask to be raped thing, because I'm wholeheartedly in support of that idea that no matter how a woman dresses, she's not asking to be raped. In fact, it's impossible to really ask to be raped, because if you want it, then it's not rape, right? So, however, if you are wearing skimpy clothing, what you are asking, at least in my eyes, or in my opinion, is you're asking to be appreciated from a visual capacity, right? You're showing your body off on purpose. You want people to notice your body, right? And your body is an object, right? So you might be asking them to rape you, but you're kind of, in a way, asking them to objectify you. But again, I don't have that same negative stigma of objectify as most people do. So,
well, I don't think this has to be an issue solely on women. I mean, you see these musclehead dudes walking around with their arms, you know, in sleeveless shirts with their arms rippling, their muscles rippling out. They're doing the same thing. They want you to notice their gigantic arms.
Oh yeah, it's really apparent in the especially in the gay community with the men too. I mean, vanity is just like through the roof. It's all about the look, you know. It's about the look. It's about the clothes. It's about the, you know, just it's kind of, it's unfortunate how much emphasis is on the superficial stuff in the gay community, I feel like. But that's just kind of my impression.
The powers that be have done their best to make us all a bunch of consumer whores. And they succeeded with women. And, of course, I make statements in general, and I get in trouble for that. I'm not saying that every woman is a consumer whore. But women in general will, you know, go to the mall and go window shopping and spend money that they maybe shouldn't be spending, et cetera, and buy all these frivolous things. Boy's nephew wrote a book, Propaganda, where he basically studied how to get people to buy all this crap, And it's, you know, it's a really important book for marketing and everything. And if you look at the advertisements that have been focused on women throughout the decades, those same strategies are being used on men. And, you know, look at Axe body spray.
Right.
That's ridiculous. And now, you know, men are becoming their own market when they weren't really before. So if you have the population focused on those extrinsic values, you know, like look at just the American life. You work 5 days a week, you know, and then you have 2 days to actually live your life where you have to, you know, you go shopping, you have to look right, you have all these extrinsic things. And then you end up with this depressed population, which, you know, all the adults are on antidepressants, all the kids are on Ritalin. And why, I mean, if your life is that, can I curse?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, please do.
If your life is fucked up, why would you care about the, like, 20 workers going on with your slave labor?
Right.
Oh, yeah, totally. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and, you know, demonize all attention on appearances because, you know, There's some cool things about the aesthetics, you know. I mean, it's nice to look nice. It's nice to be, you know, attractive. However, that should definitely not be, like the top priority as if it's being made nowadays. It's like your appearance is almost the most important thing. And then maybe it's your personality or your sense of humor or your intelligence or whatever. And especially for intelligence, I feel like it's almost kind of people are, insecure about someone who else is intelligent, so they kind of make fun of them, or they're nerdy, or they're kind of a geeky person, or something. Like, it's almost a bad thing to be, like, intelligent, right? Because you're just kind of a nuisance at that point.
You want to be in the center of the normal curve. You don't want to stick out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They said you know, school.
Yeah, that's a good point. It all comes from this idea that kids are put together in groups by age, and then forced to be in the same environment with each other, which I think fosters the whole idea that we need to look a certain way, we need to dress a certain way, and act a certain way. And so, yeah, you come out being all about, you know, looks and appearance and not really about anything else.
You know, what's interesting about that, too, I went to a Catholic school where we had uniforms, and so it all became about which shoes you were wearing.
Wow.
You know, like, my family spent all their money on my tuition and on going back home to Portugal during the summers. That was what was priority to them. So my shoes were from Payless. They were all off-brand. They weren't actually Converse. They looked a little different. So, you know, I got judged on that. Shoes.
Oh, for shame. For shame on you.
Yeah, I'm going to Europe. See y'all later with my shitty shoes.
Don't be so gauche, Antigone. Come on.
Well,
it's
here's
all
the
about
other
shoes.
I think the other unseen cost of this whole attempt to homogenize our culture and make everyone feel like they have to act a certain way is that not only does it actually achieve its effect to a large extent of making us all less unique and kind of driving our behavior in a way that's counter to our nature, but the other thing that it does is it has the tendency to make people go in the opposite direction. They've been in such an authoritarian structure the whole life. They finally get out of it. And they go crazy in exactly the opposite direction, and the complete opposite end of the spectrum is not who they are either. So I just think there's a lot of different costs that come with this whole culture of trying to make us all feel like we all should strive for this look, and we all should strive for this kind of whether it's a job or clothes or hairstyle or whatever. It has those kind of effects, I think.
Well, you know, one of the things to try to get back to the sexism thing is when I got that email, one of the things that I thought about, first of all, was trying to reach out to the listener and understand, you know, her situation. And I think, like you were mentioning before, Antigone, that the being sensitive and connecting with people is important. So I really was curious to understand, you know, what was at the root of why she felt offended about this thing, but I never got a response from her about that. But, you know, I feel it made me feel a little upset. I'm not going to say offended because I don't want to blame her for whatever, but I'm not a sexist guy, you know, so I felt a little annoyed because one, as a liberty-minded person who believes in self-ownership and voluntarism and non-aggression, there's no reason why you would need to get offended towards somebody like me, I think. I'm so totally not threatening. I'm not the one saying that women, you know, need to be forced in by law to do the X, Y, and Z or anything like that, you know. So there really is, this is sort of a non-issue. But I'm also a little annoyed because personally I'm not that kind of a guy. If I'm looking for a woman, I want a woman to be more of an equal with me than anything else. You know, an intelligent woman who can, he's not going to be, you know, forced into, you know, cleaning the house and being in the kitchen, but who would help me clean the house and be in the kitchen. You know, so it's a very much a mutually beneficial and 50-50 kind of relationship. So I don't want to say I'm offended by that, but I'm just annoyed, I guess.
Well, do you want to go ahead and say something, Tiggany, on that?
Well, I mean, that just goes, her two statements were just about you finding women sexually attractive. I really don't think there's anything wrong with that. And then when you're talking about cleaning and cooking or whatever, you know, that's a gender role, so that is a construct, true. But then I also find that, like, some strong-minded, free-thinking women will, you know, actively eschew that. And, you know, I like being in the kitchen. I like wearing dresses. I like feminine things. I don't like cooking. That's different. But, you know, I don't really want my partner to cook for me. He's terrible. So I do all the cooking. That doesn't make me any less of a, you know, strong person for that. That people are so hung up on all of these things. And actually, on an episode of my show, I had my roommate on. He's great. He was talking about how he would want a strong, self-sufficient woman. And then on our threads, someone said, oh, so are you like really impressed when a black person is articulate? And we were wow. all like, what?
Wow.
You know,
but that's the thing, no matter what you say,
like somebody, non-sequitur.
Right, somebody's going to take offense and label you either a sexist or a racist, no matter what you say, because then you run the risk of being patronizing and saying, well, I'm not, you know, I have black friends, or, you know, I don't want my woman to be in the kitchen. And then somebody will make a comment and say, well, you're a sexist anyway. It doesn't matter what you say.
You know, Tiffany, I'm so happy you made the point that you do some of this housework stuff too, but you don't feel like it makes you any less of a strong, independent person. Because I feel like even the so-called feminists who take the stance that women shouldn't be in the house, they should be having their own independent careers and stuff. No, I think that misses the point entirely. I think what the real point should be, if it's not already, is that women should just feel free to do whatever it is they want to do. If they want to be a stay-at-home mom and work in the kitchen and the house and keep it up to par or whatever, there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's what they want to do. That's a necessary function. If they want to have their own career and not have any children, and that's fine too. It's about freedom of choice, not feeling outside pressure to do something that you don't want to do. You know, I think that's the real crux of the issue, is making sure women feel empowered to do whatever they want to do, whether or not that's consistent with traditional roles for women or not. It doesn't really matter. It's inconsequential.
Well, and if anything, also, having both parents in the workforce definitely leads to all children, you know, being taken care of by the state rather than by their parents.
That's right.
So you need both parents to go to work because one of their salaries is likely to be going all to income taxes. And then you have a bunch of latchkey kids, you know, on Ritalin and whatever.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, both my parents went to work, and I was on Ritalin and went to public school, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And you're right, so it's I would much prefer
that.
What's that?
I'm really sorry to hear that.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's common, right? It's not fine, but I've dealt with those things. But anyways, I think some of the answers to that is, look, we shouldn't ask ourselves, is it the ideal situation that someone has to stay home and clean the house and watch the kids? We have to ask, is it the best option? And we have to compare it to the actual options that are out there, because the alternative to that, like you said, where both parents are working, is you're sending your kids to some strangers to raise them who don't have nearly as much of a best interest to make sure they're being raised properly or being taught the right stuff, who don't care about the child's interest. They only care about obedience and how easy their job is, right? So you're sending them in a terrible environment just because maybe you feel like there's some superficial sense of not wanting to be a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad, you know? So I think that's a wonderful point that you made.
Right. So this reminds me of one other thing that happened to me recently was I found a YouTube video about some of the facts behind this myth that women make less than men in the workplace. And the video examined, you know, salaries and the differences between women who have children and are out of the workforce for a couple of years. And according to this video, which I'll find for the show notes, and the facts that he presents is that women who forego having family lives and end up being just like the men and career oriented for most of their lives, they make just as much as the men do. So there is this thing that I think comes up a lot with the sexist issue is the denial of biological roles. You know, biology is not something we choose. We're born a man, we're born a woman. That's something that we have to deal with. I think that the modern feminist movement is really focused a lot on trying to deny that biology. I think that you look at these feminists, they don't like that they're the childbearing of the two sexes. They wish that they blame the men for having the penis, essentially, and for them having the vagina. It's not their fault. They should not have to have the consequences of their biology, and somehow dealing with that is sexist.
I see where you're going with that, Mike. I don't know if that's quite accurate, though. I think I'd phrase it instead as feminists are against a certain gender role. And I feel like where they're mistaken is when they try to superimpose what their own version of the gender role is, when they don't realize the issue isn't what the gender role is, but the fact that there's a gender role to begin with. That it should be the individual's choice to choose what they do with their life. That there shouldn't be a gender role, right?
But Mike, you're talking biology. There's biology, there's sex, and then there's gender. I mean, it's true that women are the ones that bear the children. And to think that you're not going to have sex unless you're trying to have a baby is just completely ridiculous. And women do have to deal with that. And there are differences because of that. There are biological differences. Mm-hmm. Men are stronger than women. Feminists will say, oh, you know, women are just as strong. No, men have 50% more upper body strength. Okay. Mm-hmm. To negate that is just, you are taking yourself out of any debate. And men are under social pressure to have that strength, mm-hmm. to go to the gym and to have those muscles. You know, that's more of the gender role, but naturally, men have more muscle mass than women. Men are better equipped to protect women who are physically weaker. You have to actually talk about the truth if you're going to have a debate.
But that's what I'm saying. They want to deny those truths. They want to say it's sexist to say that women are weaker.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous. That's just a physiological fact, right?
Right.
That's nothing to do with biases or prejudice or whatever.
Is it sexist to say that women have a period every month and, like, are basically sick for a few days every month?
No.
Well, I think they would say that, yeah.
It's just a biological truth. Like, I feel like crap today. Okay, moving on.
And likewise, for men, we're chronic masturbators. That's just a biological truth for men.
You just wake up and there it is.
I don't think women understand how difficult it can be to have a penis at times. You know, when you wake up, say you're at a friend's house, right, and you wake up with morning wood, but you have to go to the bathroom. So you're trying to get to the bathroom, but you don't want to pass in front of your group of friends with a boner. You know, that's a complicated thing. Or, you know, back when I...
friends.
Yeah. Well,
there's never been an issue with me, Mike. I don't know.
I don't want to walk in front of my group of friends. And then there was that thing that I think all teenage boys go through is what I call the phantom boner. Like when you're just going through puberty, you can't control it sometimes. It just happens. And that's the worst thing. It's like you're on the bus and all of a sudden it just happens. And now you're in public. And now what do you do? You know?
I don't know, Mike. If you're comparing, if you're saying that's embarrassing, I agree it could be embarrassing. But to say it's worse than women? I don't know, because maybe men get boners sometimes they don't want to, but when women are going through their puberty and getting periods, they're having a period in the middle of their class, all the students around. That's a little bit more embarrassing, I think.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm just, you know, being funny, but I know.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I totally understand. Oh,
if you want to talk about control over your own life, you know, talk about pregnancy.
Right.
You know, look at what the government is doing right now where women don't have control over that. So if you're going to, you know, you can do everything responsibly. You can be on the birth control pill, which a lot of women can't be on because it's seriously screwing with your hormones, with your brain, with your chemistry. Or you can use condoms, which break and slip. So if you get pregnant and
they suck.
What?
Well, and they kind of suck too. Condoms.
Well, yes. There are methods of birth control that are not available in the U.S. that would work much better, that don't have any hormonal effects on women, and they are not here because the FDA has not approved them because we live in such a backwards puritanical society.
Really? So, what are they? I've never heard of these other alternatives.
In Europe, there's the, it's got a really lame name. It's a gyna something or other. It's not even hormonal. One that is available to women here is this huge topic thing that causes lots of bleeding, so you're not going to want to have sex anyway, which I guess is a form of birth control. But you know, there are options, and they're not really being researched either because it's this punishment to women, I think. You know, mm-hmm. that sex is bad and it should be punished unless it's in a marriage. Okay, well, just because you get married doesn't mean you want to have kids either. From a case study I saw probably 10 years ago now, 80% of fertile women do not want to have kids. And that should be their decision, you know, with birth control. But there are these advocates of breeding and of the traditional religious family life that think that, you know, everyone should have kids. Just because I have ovaries doesn't mean that you can tell me what to do with them.
Well, I think what that has to do with, at least from the religious perspective, is the more kids you have, the more the more minds you control, right? The more Christians you're creating, the more Muslims you're creating, the more life form of, you're breeding out the other people, right?
The new religion is the state.
Oh, yeah, that's certainly a religion.
They want more tax livestock.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's really interesting. I think is there anything else you want to say about the discrimination issue, Mike?
Yeah, there's plenty I want to say.
Okay, please keep going, because I'm kind of running out of
thoughts. I guess the thing that also bothers me about modern feminists is that they're all about sort of getting favors from the state. Like, you know, we want other people to pay for our birth control or whatnot. But they're completely in the dark about these alternatives that Antigone was talking about. And the fact that the FDA holds them back, the state is holding them back, and they don't realize it. And yet they go out there and advocate for more statism, which is annoying.
Don't men advocate for more statism too? Like, I keep hearing that women don't. Statism. So do men. Women can't get economics. Neither do men.
Yeah.
I think that's true, Antigone. I think most men and most women do not get economics and ask for more states. However, I would say that there are, even though that it's most on both sides, I think there are a greater percentage of women who are more fond of the state than the men. And I think that has to do a lot with the psychology of women, mainly, that they're more like community oriented. They're more comfortable in cooperative communities. They don't feel as autonomous generally. You know, men are more usually, they tend to be like this, more prone towards autonomy and being independent and strong and self-sufficient. And that's why you see in the libertarian community, there's like an 18-to-1 ratio of men to women. It's ridiculous. But no, you're right, though, that most of them are asking for state, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's, like, psychological, like, you know, part of the biology.
It's not part of the biology, it's the culture.
It's the way that children are raised in Western societies. I don't know, I mean, I was raised by immigrants, European immigrants in America, so that's what I can speak mostly to. There was a segment on 2020 that I saw growing up done by John Stossel, which has very much affected how I think on this subject. And what he did is that he gave lemonade to a group of little boys and a group of little girls separately. And he did not put any sugar in that lemonade. The boys said, "Don't quit your day job, mister. This is gross. I don't want any more." And the girl said, "That's very nice. Thank you. Can I have another?" girls are raised to be, to not make any waves, to go with the flow, to be really nice and have everyone like them. And then when you have a strong, independent woman, what are you going to say? She's a bitch because she has opinions. I did an interview recently where one of the comments was, I prefer my women with vaginas, not opinions.
Wow. Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah, I totally agree, Antigone, that it's a cultural thing, not a physiological thing. It's the psychology they get due to the culture that they're raised in. And it is unfortunate, I think. And I think it's unfortunate because I feel like generally, whether it's a typical man or typical woman, like a woman, I don't feel like the typical woman that is, I don't feel like has enough appreciation for like reason and rationality and autonomy and stuff. And likewise for the men, I don't think they have nearly enough, the typical man that is, they have nearly enough appreciation for empathy and intuition and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think it's unfortunate that we feel like we have to have one or the other. Like there's this false dichotomy. Like we can't make like an overall comprehensive appreciation for both sides of our social relations.
Right. And, you know, Chase, that's a good point because I've been thinking about this a lot is I think a lot of the problems with, you know, gender roles in America comes a lot from parents. I mean, you look at – and this is an observation based on guys solely – is I think that men in general have terrible relationships with their daughters because they just don't know how to relate to them. And that, in my opinion, causes – women to grow up without any kind of really good male role models. And that's part of the problem is I don't think that, you know, men are sensitive enough to deal with their daughters. And also we have this sort of backwards opinion, sort of denying sexuality with young girls. You know, I've heard plenty of men say this, that they'll lock their daughters up in the basement until they're 25 and there's no dating and the boyfriend's going to get subject to, you know, shotgun to the face if he, you know, all this kind of protective stuff. And what that does, though, is that denies the young woman a chance to explore her sexuality. Whereas on the other hand, that same father would give his son the Playboy and congratulate him for, you know, chasing after skirts. You know, it's a total, you know, double standard here, and I think that's really hurting our society as a whole.
Well, fatherhood is a really interesting concept, the way that America has twisted it. You know, like back in the day, he was in the other room smoking cigars with his buddies as his wife or, you know, partner or whatever, most likely wife back then, I guess. Would be going through this traumatic experience without, you know, her most loved person in the world. And the dad, his job was supposed to go make the money. And now I know that, you know, lots of fathers have issues, you know, bathing their daughters or something, you know, because it's, they're going to be accused of molestation. You know, right. I've heard stories of like a grandfather was changing his granddaughter in the back of his pickup truck because he was at Home Depot. And some bitch, some like Sheila Broflowski character, called the cops on him for molesting his granddaughter. He was
what? Super. Oh my god!
You know, it's so like men are afraid to show affection to their daughters. That is completely ridiculous. You know, I still kiss my dad on the cheek. You know, of course we're European. It's two kisses, but yeah. Like it's so weird. And I remember the time when my little brother and my dad stops kissing, you know, and I get that, I guess, because he was like, you know, 11 or 12. It's like you stop kissing your son all of a sudden. It's just so weird. It's not, it doesn't become sexual all of a sudden, you know,
right.
you're family, you're, you know, you're supposed to be affectionate like that. And I know I've heard lots of men like say, like, I, you know, I don't know how to act with my daughter.
Yeah.
It's really ridiculous.
It is. And I understand it's definitely tough, but I have a close female friend who has a great relationship with her father, and, you know, she's not afraid to hug him and kiss him and even, you know, cuddle at times. And I know that's very weird from an American point of view, but from a European point of view, that's pretty normal. And I think Americans have this weird idea over this where everything has to be about sex. It's funny how this culture is all about denying that sex exists and all this stuff, but yet everything has to be about sex. You know, like there was a story in the news just the other day about a couple in New Jersey who took pictures of their little baby
naked. You know, not meaning it to be sexual, of course, but when they went to go process the photos, they were arrested for child pornography.
Oh, my God. Everyone has naked baby pictures, man.
Yeah, but that's totally ridiculous.
Yeah, I totally agree, Mike, and I like Antigone's points about the weird stigma of showing your child affection, even not just with men with their daughters, but also, like you said, men with their sons, too. And I think that's true again, Mike, the fact that we repress it so much, if anything, that act of repression is what causes most perversion that everyone is so afraid of. The act of repression is what causes people to have these fucked up feelings inside themselves, and they one day just kind of seep out of them in an unhealthy way, and that's what creates some of the pedophilia or the unhealthy sexual behavior that we see so often. If you stop making sex such as forbidden fruit, and you stop making affection so always having to be closely related with sex, then I think you kind of lose a lot of those predaceous sexual behaviors.
Right, when you can't talk about it in polite company, that's when you start going on the internet and looking up German porn, which leads you to Japanese porn, and then you're in a whole different planet right there.
Well, what
a few stereotypes there.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to get some more hate mail for that.
Hate mail's good. Well, American society is seen as so sexualized, right? If you look at like music videos and things like that, but that's just like the shallow pop culture layer. You know, when it comes to actual sex and actual conversations about it, we don't actually have those. You know, there are boobs everywhere. There's cleavage everywhere. There's Victoria's Secret models, etc. But actual sex issues and how genders deal with each other, et cetera, that is all very repressed and puritanical.
Hey, Mike, we should pause right here and put that clip from The Devil's Advocate where he talks about that monologue, like, look, but don't touch. Touch, but don't taste. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, you should tell, because that's exactly what it is, man. It's,
It's the knowledge, you know. We're not passing the knowledge to our children because it's too taboo to talk about. So, therefore, they go through life without this knowledge. And then if they're more influenced by pop culture, they're going to see more, you know, sexually explicit behavior come out on the pop culture. And I think they're going to not have any kind of knowledge of understanding of this and act it out. Like, I wanted to bring this up now is, you know, there's more and more scandals every week that come out about young girls, you know, sexting or sending naked pictures of themselves to, you know, texting them to their boyfriends in high school and stuff. And, you know, I don't know where to begin really understanding that other than the possibility of that there's a lack of communication with their parents about, you know, teaching their kids about sexuality or what's going on with the opposite sex. And this is where I think the strong father figure could really work in is if you're talking to your daughter, having an honest conversation with her about the way guys think, about, you know, what to prepare, how to prepare yourself for dealing with men and their hormones too, is a good conversation. I mean, we don't even have that. I mean, parents don't even have that with their sons. You know, so having that conversation with your kids in a very honest and open way, I think is going a long way to giving them the knowledge to understand their bodies in the future.
Well, see, you say in the future. How about the whole concept of adolescence? It's actually a really new concept. And, you know, 15-year-olds were adults. They are physically mature. And yet we put them in these, like, high schools, in these little boxes where they have no control over their lives at all. And then that's where you get teen angst because they have the capacity, but they're not allowed to. Who wouldn't be?
Oh, yeah, I totally see that, Antigone. And like, when I see, like, maybe, like, older, like, some teachers and students in high school, you know, they get in trouble and even get criminal charges passed against them for fooling around with their students, I mean, at that point, it's my feeling that if the young adult is both, you know, aware of the implications of the actions of sex, that it could lead to pregnancy, that maybe they'll get disease from it, they know what it is, and if it's voluntary, I mean, maybe it would be, don't know, maybe it wouldn't be very socially nice for the older gentleman or the woman to fool around with the young adult, but as far as I'm concerned, they both have the right to do what they want with their own bodies, so long as they're not doing something against the other person's will. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, that's a great point. And it brings up another double standard in our society is that, you know, you see these cases where an older female teacher sleeps with a young male student and she gets off with very little, criminal charges or whatnot. But if it was the other way around, the older male teacher with the younger female student, then he's, you know, the book is thrown at him. He's considered, you know, a rapist and a sexual, you know, molester and offender, all this kind of stuff. To me, it seems like we have no problem in our greater society denying young women their right to self-ownership. And I think it's almost like, no, young girl, you're not a woman yet. You're not really a person yet, so you're going to be repressed. That's how I take it. I don't know how you guys feel about it. But
well, I did recently see the mugshot of a 27-year-old woman that was incarcerated and, of course, labeled a sexual offender for the rest of her life, right? So you know how those laws work.
Right.
For having a relationship with a 16-year-old female.
How do you feel?
She needs to report that. It's crazy.
Well, so Antigone, how do you feel about that subject? Like, if it's, let's say, it's like a 15-year-old girl and a 30-year-old man or something, and the girl knows what sex is. She knows what it could entail. Do you think that she should have the right to have sex with him and vice versa, as long as it's a consensual thing and both parties are aware of the implications of their actions?
I think what's much more important in that situation, rather than age, is power. Is the 30-year-old male her teacher or her boss or, you know, somehow above her?
Does that really matter? I mean, as long as it's consensual.
I think that's what matters. Yeah, the power dynamic. And I don't know that 15-year-old girl. If I would know that 15-year-old girl, maybe I'd have an opinion on it one way or the other. If I was her aunt or.
All right, we're assuming that she's aware of what sex could entail as far as like health wise and pregnancy wise. And that she's also wanting to do it consensually without any sort of coercion as far as the threat of physical force or physical violence.
Yeah, I think it would be a really personal issue. I think a lot of people, I think that the PC response to that would be absolutely not. That would be, you know, she couldn't make that decision or, you know, she's just too young, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think that's a case-by-case basis.
Well, I'll take it to the worst-case scenario. You know what? Even if it was the case, let's say that it's a 15-year-old girl and it's her high school teacher, and he says, let's do an employer instead. That it's a employer at a private company. He says, hey, if you don't have sex with me, I'm gonna fire you. You know, if she chooses to have sex with them, you know, I don't see any rights violations here because he's not threatening her with physical force. He's not using any physical force upon her. It's his business. If he wants to hire or fire people for whatever reason he wants to, that's his prerogative.
And
you know,
here's where libertarians get in trouble.
Yes. We're going to get real hate mail on this one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, seriously, though, like, if you look at it from a principled perspective, I mean, is it against social mores, perhaps? Would I look down upon some guy for doing that? Of course. But am I going to say there's any rights violation in there? I don't think so. I don't see anything that's a rights violation. I don't see anything that's quote unquote inherently wrong with that.
Would you stop buying that company's product?
Yeah, I would. And that's how then Mark would naturally mend these scenarios. If some guy is telling a girl that she has to have sex in order to keep her job and that gets out, then they'll lose money. That's the way the profit incentive works.
But why would you stop? Let's say that it's a high-quality product and it's at a low cost. Why would you stop buying that product?
Well, I guess I have to retract my statement. If it was, like, way better than the competition and it was really cheap, I probably wouldn't stop buying it, I guess.
The employer would have to pay the cost of his, you know, sexual deviancy in the sense that a lot more women would not want to work for him. And so he'll have to deal with a smaller labor pool, you know, maybe a lot less talented people to work for him, you know, and certainly there'll be men too who say, no, that's disgusting, I don't want to work for you, and they'll leave because of that too. So he's either going to have to really compensate the women a hell of a lot more to put up with his sexism, or he's just going to have to find people who are okay with that kind of environment. So it's going to be a lot harder for him to deal with it.
He wants to have sex. That is not sexism.
Right. I'm so used to dealing with statists that my language has been all screwed up.
No, I totally agree. But, you know, yeah, again, I don't see that that's inherently wrong to threaten someone, like, say, hey, if I'm an employer and it's my business and I say, have sex with me or don't work here, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. You know, would I do that? No, because I don't think that's good for business or money making, and because it's against my personal values. But I don't think it's unethical. I don't think it's a rights violation. And I think people should be allowed to do that if they want to do that.
Interesting, interesting. Wow. Wow, I'm just anticipating the volume of mail. firstdegreeliberty@gmail.com, by the way. Put Chase is a sexist pig in the subject line, so I just
forwarded
it right to
him. Well, I figured he already, Mike, so I figure I may as well go ahead and take some of the heat off of you.
Well, this is interesting stuff because I think that, you know, it's sort of obvious stuff that needs to be dealt with, but nobody wants to touch it because of the subject matter. Nobody wants to deal with the issue of, you know, jailbait or anything like that, because it's such a dangerous topic, you know?
Oh, yeah. The other thing you were talking about, Mike, as far as the disparity in pay between women and men, even if that were true, even if there was a disparity, to me it's irrelevant. That's the kind of stuff, if you want to actually fix those issues at their core, that is the kind of thing that the market takes care of on its own. That's how the market equilibrates. If you're denying more qualified women the same amount of pay as men, then you're depriving yourself of competent workforce, and you will see the result of that in your bottom line. And then the person is not going to deny them that kind of paycheck is going to reap the extra profit because of it. And that's how the market works. You know, it works without coercion. It works without the threats of physical force or the use thereof, and everyone's happy, you know?
If there's any disparity amongst any groups, the best way would be to remove all of the barriers, the like false barriers to entry that the government puts on small business owners.
Yes, I 110% agree with that.
Right, the more competition for workers, the better the chances are you're going to get, you know, more equal pay and stuff like that. If you're, you know, limited, then there's not much you can do, right? If you're at XYZ bank and you're getting paid less than the man, what are you going to do? There's only like three other banks and they all do the same thing. There's no real choice there.
Even there, you're kind of coming from, I don't mean to offend you, but that's your decision to make. You're kind of coming from a status way of thinking there. Like, you're thinking of workers working for other people. I think in a free society, you can have a lot more entrepreneurs.
Oh,
a lot
yeah.
more small competing.
Oh, yeah. And Antigone, I like the fact that I'm really impressed that you bring up the whole, we need to just take down all barriers of to entry in any industry. Because you're right, that's truly the best way to limit this kind of undesirable behavior. Because, and this goes into monopolies too, people have this wrong idea of monopolies, that it's a single service provider. And that's not true. A monopoly is the exclusive privilege to perform a certain service, right? And the privilege implying that they will use force against other people who try to compete with them. You know, so even if it is a single service provider, they still have to act according to what the consumers want them to or their employees want them to, because if they don't and they start losing money or whatever, or the employees are dissatisfied and they start leaving, then another person could start offering the service they do. So because it's a freedom of entry into that industry, you know. So they're also competing with non-existent competition, if you will, if that makes any sense. So yeah, that's I think that's totally probably the best way, like you said, end all barriers to the entry into any industry, and you'll see a lot of this behavior kind of dissipate naturally.
Yeah, that's a good point. So there's one other thing I wanted to bring up here, which was and this kind of works the same way with racism and sexism, it's kind of interchangeable here, is that when you make the assumption, I'll do it from the sexist point of view, if you're a woman, you make the assumption that just because I'm a man, that I'm automatically sexist, isn't that itself a sexist premise?
Well, yeah, but how many women actually do that?
Well, it's, I mean, the same with racist. They're always automatically assuming that I'm a white guy, therefore I'm racist, is racist.
Yeah, no, that's racist too. And it's not reverse discrimination, it's discrimination, right?
Right.
Reverse discrimination, that's the funniest shit I've ever heard of.
They make up all kinds of funny shit when dealing with this kind of thing. So yeah, so do you have any final comments?
I hope you get lots of hate mail.
Fuck I'm queers, sure fuck queers, blacks, Jews, and women.
Oh, no. Yeah, but the thing is, no matter how much of a joke you how obviously you make it that it's a joke, it doesn't matter. People are still going to get pissed off. They're still going to get offended. And I've dealt with this for a long time, Meg. I used to be in radio before this, and no matter what you do, somebody's going to take offense to it.
You know what's funny? There's no political recourse for saying things like "fuck everyone," right? But if you just pinpoint a particular group, then all of a sudden it's like it's awful. Even though to say if I said I only hate black people, that would be way worse than saying I hate everyone for some reason, right? You would think that the less people you hate, the better it is, right?
So, yeah. So here's another thing I've thought of people who get offended by this stuff is I'd like to meet somebody who's never laughed at a racist joke, who's never laughed at a blonde joke or anything like that. I'd love to meet that person.
They don't exist.
Right. It's kind of like that thing that I hate to bring Jesus up in this, but it's that Jesus saying of he who is without sin throw the first stone, right? He who has never laughed at a black joke can call me a racist here. Because everybody I've ever met has laughed at some kind of inappropriate joke, no matter how PC they are.
Oh, dude, I love racist humor. I love racist humor. I love sexist humor. I love humor against things that I share, against queers and against white dudes. It's all hilarious. I mean, humor based on stereotypes is probably my favorite form of comedy. And it's my favorite form, not just because it tends to be, you know, in my eyes, the most funny, but because I feel like it's really the most effective way of breaking down racial or religious or sexual orientation barriers and tensions. I really do, because you're kind of belittling it. You know, you're kind of making it into something less than what it already is, which it should be less than what it is. It should be less of a big deal than what it is, you know?
So, let's make the rounds here. Antigone, do you get offended by anything?
Do I get offended?
Yeah.
Sure, I do.
What kind of things offend you?
Well, now you got me on the spot.
I'm just curious because I'm thinking about myself, and I just can't think of things that offend me. I'm pretty easygoing. You know, people can make fun of my weight, my height, my appearance, my racial, you know, racial backgrounds, whatever, and I don't find it offensive. Like, is there something wrong with me that I just don't care enough to, you know, go ahead, you know, make a fat Italian joke about me? It's not going to bother me. I don't know.
Well, those are all group-based things. I would get offended by things that are pointed at me as an individual. I get offended when someone that I consider close or considered close misreads my motivation for behavior. You know, something like that will offend me. Only people that are in my inner circle can really offend me.
Yeah, and Tiffany, I think that really speaks a lot to your character, because I think that what that shows is that if someone were to make a pejorative remark against you because of your sex or because of your hair color or your ethnicity or whatever, I think you would realize that doesn't really hurt your feelings at all or anything, because, you know, it's totally empty, you know, and unsubstantiated. But if they actually make an insult against you and it's someone who knows you, then, yeah, I think, especially if it's someone who knows you, they should know better than to say something like that. Yeah, that's totally I think, a more legitimate grounds to be offended.
Well, like you just mentioned, too, being offended by people who misread your people who know you who misread your intentions. They should know you, and they should know better, right? So it's kind of offensive for them to assume that you would have done something when you didn't mean it to be that way.
You know what I get offended by? All these, and, you know, I'm gonna group these people together now. All these, like, supposedly liberals who are supposedly all about diversity. You know, and you know why it pisses me off? Because it's totally untrue. Anyone who's a super statist or who's for huge public education programs and huge social programs, these things are all about homogenizing a culture. It's exactly the opposite of diversity. They are taking away the diversity through trying to put everyone through these one-size-fits-all policies or education or whatever. You know, it's... So this whole claim to appreciating diversity is bullshit from the people who claim to have it. I think the real people who appreciate diversity are libertarians. Because why? We support the smallest minority. That's the individual. You don't get more diversity than a compilation of billions of individuals, right? So I don't know. That kind of irks me, I think.
And you know what else? With that concept, what these people are doing, particularly with the two sexes, is that they will encourage women to be in industries that might not be best suited for them, like physical stuff, right? Where they'll need to have a quota of women in these positions that would be better suited for men. There are large, very strong women. That's true. I'm not saying that women shouldn't be allowed to, but there's this pressure, you know, to hire people that are not best suited for the job due to fill these diversity quotas. And then right. that leads to resentment where, like, the men will be around, like, oh, there's a woman here. Like, do I need to change my language? Or, like, oh, I need to go help her with everything, et cetera, et cetera. If that woman was hired without these quotas, there wouldn't be that resentment between the successes.
I have a funny little anecdote to throw in there is I went to architecture school, and there was this one black kid there that was totally not there based on merit. It was pretty obvious. So we just called him affirmative action.
Oh, shit.
That's terrible, Mike.
It's terrible, but it's true. That's what you get. You end up, you know, the person was definitely not qualified to be there. But they're there because of some obvious thing, like they're black and they needed one more. And I went to a school, Roger Williams University in Rhode Island, which RWU was the initials, and people used to call it Rich White University because it was like 99.5% white kids. So, yeah, I mean, they needed black people, and they just basically found, oh, you come here. You're black, and, you know, go to.
Oh, yeah, and it's insulting.
It is, but if it weren't for things like affirmative action, I would hope that that thought wouldn't have even occurred to anyone.
Right.
If it was
based on, like, what Martin Luther King was talking about, the content of your character and whatnot, then certainly not going to say, well, that guy's here just because he's black. Of course not. Because you know, then obviously he's here, if there wasn't such thing as affirmative action, then you would know he's there on his own merit.
Well, and I like to think that these government mandates to have quotas for universities or whatever it is, even for the military, I think those sort of policies are what perpetuate racial tensions and sexist tensions. Because, of course, who's gonna be pissed off about this? White people about that? And then also, not only are white people gonna be pissed about it, but it's in a way suppressing other minorities by implying that they need some sort of handicap, so they get kind of complacent. So all around, it's hurting the people who it's supposed to help, and it's pissing off the majority at the same time. It's totally counterproductive, no matter how you look at it, you know?
Everyone's pissed off at everyone else instead of being pissed off at the government.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like women in combat. This is kind of horrifying. I don't know why you would want, if you were a woman, why you would want to join the military, because of you're in a situation where you're putting yourself into a group of men, mostly men, who have been
you know, dealing with combat stress and whatnot, and then they've been isolated from women for months and in some cases years, and you're putting them in a situation now where now all of a sudden there's women.
I'll tell you why they want to be in the military. Because, I mean, I don't know if you know this, Tiggany.
Yeah,
I was in the military for, well, I was in the military for 4 years, so I have a lot of experience. Women in the military are treated like goddesses because there's like 15 men to every one woman. So
you mean before or after they're raped?
That's a good point.
I totally understand that some of them get raped. I'm talking about for the most part, right? That's not the norm. But for the most part, women in the military are pretty much like put on a pedestal everywhere they go. Like, and I hate it, honestly, and this might sound sexist, but I hated working with women because all the supervisors in my shop, they'd all give them special attention. They wouldn't work, they wouldn't hardly ever work as much. They would kind of be off doing some sort of community service stuff instead of their job. And it's not just their fault. It's the fact that the supervisors and the managers all allow it to happen. They don't do anything about it. They don't get on to them about it. And I don't know if you've ever heard this term, like when they get deployed, they're called desert queens, you know, because all the guys are hitting on them because there's so few of them. So they feel like they're all special and all that in a bag of chips, right? So, no, there's lots of reasons why women want to be in the military, you know? It's a good pay, good benefits, also, all the attention, you know?
Go ahead.
Who's going to talk? That goes back to the resentment, you know, that I was referring to earlier. From what I've read, women actually don't have to pass as strenuous of tests as men do.
Yep, they have lower PT standards. Yep.
And there you are in combat, which a woman can choose to do, but not necessarily the man. You know, he's mandated to, and you're fighting alongside each other. And then what happens? She's not as well qualified. I mean, she could be, but most likely not.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And your life's on the line at that point. Mm-hmm. I totally understand resentment.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And there's also
go ahead.
Now, one of the drawbacks of not doing a show in the same studio. One of the other things is there's such high incidences of rape and sexual assault in the military.
I don't know. I really don't know that it's any really higher than anywhere else. Like, I know it happens, but I don't know if it's a really a higher incidence of it in the military than in the private sector or whatever.
I don't have any numbers in front of me, but it is rampant. And then, then you have other things where some women will say it's sexual harassment when a guy asks her out for the second time after she rejected him the first time. You know, so you never know what people's standards are on that. But
right.
It's military. Now, well, I don't believe this shit, but it's supposed to be about honor and dignity and, you know, all of this type of stuff. And it should not be happening there.
It shouldn't be happening anywhere, right? Yeah, and I agree. And I think what might account for some of it, I'm not going to claim it for all of it because I know there are many legitimate rape cases, of course. I don't want to diminish that. But I must go to, like, once every 2 or 3 months, some sort of rape conference where they take all the enlisted people to this little theater and they talk about sexual harassment. This is what rape is, and this is what that is. And tell your commander if you have any inkling whatsoever that there might be sexual harassment. So they kind of set up an environment in the military where everyone's really hypersensitive to the whole like sexual harassment and assault kind of bullshit. So that, I think that might account for some of the extra numbers. And that also on top of that, they probably have better records keeping for what assaults happened when and who was raped where, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because they just keep better track of that than maybe someone would in just a general private sector community, you know. Because it's more of a political thing in the military.
So many reasons to end the military.
Oh, in the state, yeah. I mean, it's awful. It eats your soul, man. And it fanalizes all these young people. It doesn't make you to the man. It keeps you a child. And it actually totally degrades your critical thinking abilities, makes you less responsible because all of your food's paid for, your medical care is paid for, dental care is paid for, your room is paid for, so all the money you make is just disposable. right? And then when it's disposable, they don't have any sense of responsibility for things. So they end up I don't know how many military people I knew that have like $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 credit card debt, and there's absolutely no excuse for that because they get paid way too much money. They get paid way too much money to get into that kind of debt, man. It's awful.
Wow.
Veterans actually make up a third of the homeless population in America.
Wow.
Yeah. It's because they're infantilized in the military. I know that firsthand. It's awful. It's degrading.
Well, that and the PTSD.
Sure, definitely. That's certainly an attributing factor.
Support our troops!
Yeah, oh man, I hate that. You know, every time I get thanked for my service, you know, I'm just... This like knot in my stomach. It's like, no, everything I did in the military, if anything, took away from your security and wasted your money.
Since we got so far off topic, I think that does that signify that we're done with this? Are we true?
I think we're pretty much done. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Antigone, or any plugs you want to put in there?
Well, I will say that if you're going to engage in sexist or racist humor, make sure it's clever and funny. What's really unattractive is a bunch of dudes standing around talking about how their wives nag them or how, yeah, I got rid of my wife, I divorced her, and stupid shit like that. Be clever. Also, you can check out Sex, Lies, and Anarchy at sexliesanarchy.com, and we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes.
All right, some sound advice from Antigone. Thank you so much. And Mike, did you have anything else?
I would highly recommend Sex, Lives, and Anarchy. It's definitely one of my favorites, so check it out.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
Well, thanks for joining us again today, Antigone.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Do you enjoy First Degree Liberty? If you do, you should share it. Pass it out to your friends. Give it to your family and share it with your neighbors. While you're at it, leave us some feedback by commenting right here on the Podomatic page or email us at firstdegreeliberty@gmail.com. Now sit back and enjoy First Degree Liberty with Chase Rachels and Mike Martelli.